dear brother and sister. Masters, when they come here to dwell in us love of God. When they leave this chain of the earth, these formations come into being, the main purpose of which is that many people may derive benefit from the formations in which practical people would guide them to love God. So purpose of joining any religion is what? We should love God. He is the creator of all creation, universe. He dwells in every heart. But here, there, somewhere He is manifest too. So where He is manifest, that is called world made flesh. So long as they are amongst us, they are overflowing with the love of God, and by radiation too we have something to start with. And they give us also how to contact with God and have love for Him. You find there are so many, we follow so many religions. All of them, they love God, they worship God. But God is the same one. It is not that Hindus have got another God, or Christians some other God, or Mohammedans some other God. God is one and the same. And the same we do love. And this we are told by all masters who came in the past. So there are thousands of people, you see, amongst all the main purposes to know God. So we are all lovers and devotees of a higher power, called by so many names. These names are given by us for God, as I explained to you yesterday. So thousands of lovers there are, but the beloved is one for all, is it not? You got, Krishna have got another God to love him, and others have got another. No, there is only one God. He whom we desire is the beloved of the whole world, and the one God of all men. Not specifically for one religion or the other, not monopoly of any sect, religion or the other. He is for all. And we are of the same essence as that of God, and we have to unite Him. Ever since we have been separated, we have forgotten Him, too little. Because we are under great delusion, as I explained to you the other day. So God is one for man, for all creation, and all the devotees have the desire to meet that very same one God, is it not? Those who really desire Him are truly speaking with His true relatives. Yes? So those who love God, they are all joined in true relation to God, isn't it not? And that person who tells us about Him, about God I mean, truly He is our brother and our friend. So He joins us in such a relation with God. He unites us with God and joins us in such a relation which cannot be broken in this world and the world hereafter. So within each master soul, there's one thing, all can derive benefit from such master souls are world-made adept, world-made flesh. So when you need master soul, you find this great devotion for this guru. And without this devotion, none can have realization. You see, because the master of this, he has seen God. You see? And we have not yet seen God. We can only have devotion to God when we see Him. Until we see that world made flesh before us. So Christ told His followers, I am the vine. Ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. So there are branches, a fruit-growing tree. He is there, and the branches are embedded with the tree. They can bear forth fruit. If you cut off the branches, then they cannot bear fruit. The purpose of God is manifested in him. And when you are attached and joined to him, naturally that love will flow to you. Those are not one with the master, they are not at that privilege. So devotee cannot do without the guru, to the effect. A child cannot do without the mother when born. He wants milk. It's the mother who gives him milk. So it means that as long as one is not truly joined to one's guru or master, one cannot be his devotee. And furthermore, cannot become a true devotee of the Lord. Although we do not see God, but we see reflections in the Master, in the Guru. And we have some reflections also, as the sea, for instance, the storm and ravage in this tank. We have not seen this tank, but the man who has dwelt that tank, we do see him. That tank radiates from the Rasa. You see? So Guru precedes God. For we have not yet seen God, and we must become as subtle, as fine as He is. We can know He is the subtlest of the subtlest. Unless you become so much subtle as He is, only then you can know God, see God. So for that reason, to enable so, to do so, each man has looked from his own level, you see. So our eyes are, you see, physical. Now in the air, because air is subtle, our eyes are physical. Now if you see, there's nothing in the atmosphere, because either our eyes be so subtle as the air it is, or whatever in the air that is magnified to come up to our level of eyes, only that can be seen, is it not? Take the example of a microscope. So if you see through it, that magnifies everything for 700 times more. If you see through it, you will find atmosphere full of tiny microbes, which even now exist, but we do not see. So the eye has not got the ability to perceive those subtle expressions of life. Similarly, God is as subtle, subtlest as the subtle, as high as He is. If He raise ourselves to that level, only we are able to see Him, not before. So if man is not as high as God, then what is his first step? A guru which is God. For God manifests in the guru. And from man's level, he therefore comes before God. From the level of man, who is better? Because in him the God is manifest, it is there but not manifest. So naturally we are drawn to that. God sends such like masters in which he manifests himself for the guidance of others where he is not manifest. So God, he is God-man, God plus man. Because God is manifest in him. If a disciple truly becomes a guru-man, he also becomes God-man. You have no God. So God-man is God plus man, God in man, or man in God. And you become God-man. Disciple becomes a guru-man. Naturally you become God-man. So unless one sees, how can one meditate upon it? How can a person put all his attention on that which he has not seen? So firstly, devotion to the Guru is very necessary. That's the first step, Guru Bhakti, devotion to the Guru. Guru is God in man. Manifest is God in man, word made flesh. So first step comes to that. Mind that, what is Guru? Our master. So the Guru is not the body, master. The Guru is the God in him which is manifest. What is world made flesh. Guru Nanak asked, who is your Guru? He said, Shabd Guru. My Guru is Shabd. Shabd is God what, you know? God is a Shabd. When he came to expression, that is called Shabd, and that is called all creation. God is wordless. When it came into being, into expression, into manifestation, that is called Word. In the beginning was the Word, Word was with God, and Word was God. And the whole creation came into being after that. So what is Word made flesh, is it? That comes first, to guide the man, here the Word within you. He can manifest that very Word within each man, which is now not manifest. So what is the first step is, Guru precedes God, for God is manifest in the Guru, and from man's level, he therefore comes before God. He is God-man, God plus man. If a disciple truly becomes a Guru-man, he also becomes God-man. So unless one sees, how can one meditate upon him? How can a person put all his attention on that which he has not seen? Can you think of what you have not seen? People say, we meditate on God. What God whom you have not seen? Without seeing, how can you meditate on Him? So masters come to that word is made manifest within you. The outer expression of the soul is attention. It is now identified with the body and all outside. So much so we have forgotten. We cannot differentiate ourselves from the body or from the world. So master or guru, what does he do? He withdraws our attention from all outside and from the body below, raises us to the eye level, which is the seat of the soul in the body, from where we are living the body below. So he helps, you see. So that power is the Guru. World makes sense. Kavi was asked, where is your Guru? He said, my Guru is above the eye level, it is seen, not before. So he is not the body, he manifests in body. So main thing is then, Guru is that power which is manifesting upon a human goal, and as such is never born, never dies. Body does live. One bulb is fueled, the other bulb is put on. The light in him is the Guru. This is a point very subtle to be understood clearly. So unless all masters have taken up the body and then left it, and we must also do the same. So Guru is not the body and the disciple is not the body. Is not the body. Disciple is conscious entity, a drop of the ocean of all consciousness, and Guru, that consciousness is manifested in him. And that power, what works through the physical form, never dies. So Brahma speaks through the body. Without the body, what can Brahma say? We are at the human level. If God speaks from above, from the higher heavens, you think, do you believe anything? He is mud, world may, he needs some body to work through. For the guidance of those who are having bodies. But the pole to which he is manifesting is also irrespective, regarding as Guru. Sri Krishna analyzing the Guru in man. We respect him as such. All the same, the Guru also conscious that he is. That power is in him, in the Guru. So never, any master never said that I am the Guru. He said God is the Guru. God does it, my master does it. So, the pole to which he is manifesting is also called the Guru, because he is manifesting there. Devotion must of necessity start with the body. Whom you are not seeing, how can you have any devotion for him? Here is a bulb, see light. If there is no bulb, then can you have love for our devotion for the light? No. So my purpose is to submit like that. Through the Guru, that power is radiating. That is working through him. You know, eyes are the windows of the soul, through which our soul peeks out. So in Master, his life, you see, we see in him a glimpse of what is manifesting in his eyes, look in his eyes. In whatever color, in whatever that soul behind, in the average man also, that radiates that thing within him. Is a man industrious? Excuse me, he radiates lust. He is loving, then he radiates love. If he is anger, then he radiates anger. Out of the abundance of power, man speaks. The eyes are the windows of the soul through which the soul peeps out. If a soul is intoxicated with God, that is that intoxication will radiate. Those glimpses of the Master raises you up to understand some higher power there. So this raises us to a higher level. Our Master used to say, people to wait to him at his feet, no, what is there? I'm up, look at me. Now there are two things, you see, he used to see a Master, you see. Everybody sees master. There are so many masters came to the world. What do people treated him, you know? They never spoke to him. One of the disciples of Christ also betrayed him. They also looked at Christ. Similarly, master came, people, very few who did not full benefit of the master. So looking around won't do. Looking is just look into the eyes where that light is radiated, that will raise your soul up. That will give you an infection. This one is only meeting, one is just identifying oneself with him. We are told to be identified, the soul radiating through the eyes of the master. So it is like that if you look into the eyes of others, the higher intoxicated radiation will raise you up. And you are all sent to the master. So the importance of this Guru. As I told you, God can have manifested without a body. And to teach other people, the men who are in the body, he must go through somebody. And that power manifesting in him, that radiates through eyes. So that means what you know? Just radiating. Look into the eyes which are the radiating that divinity, that intoxication with which his soul is imbued. That is why I say one third is learned by the word of mouth and two thirds by receptivity. That comes only when you have full loving devotion, when nothing remains between you and the master. You think master as a body, what you will gain? That is why Kabir says, you think master as a body, well, you will go to the lower place. Lord, from the body. So, bhakti or devotion to the Guru has been stressed by all masters who came so far. That's the first test. To have the two thirds of these teachings which they come to be. Christ taught the same thing. I quote to you, I am the vine, thou art the branches. If the branches are embedded in the vine, they bear fruit, full fruit. So he said, you cannot do without me. Mark the words. All masters said so. Saint Paul echoed this very thing when he said, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. Two become one. As I told you, God-man is one, is man in God, man plus God, or God plus man. And you become Guru-man then, you become God-man. There is a mirror, the light radiated here. You do not see the mirror, but you see the light. You can see the light, we draw the full benefit of the light, isn't that? Try to follow what I'm placing before you. This is something practical. Why all masters impressed on Guru Bhakti, devotion to the master. Hafiz explained that his heart was so full of the beloved that the thought of his being altogether gone. He says, my self is so much suffused with the Guru that I have forgotten who I am. I see it is he. Not now I, but Christ is in me. This is the first time to derive full benefit from the Guru. He is God-man. If you become Guru-man, then you automatically become God-man. He also says, I am become the body, mantan shavam, to janshavi, impatient, I am the body, I may become the body, you have become my life. They should not say afterward that you and I are two different people. These are the things given by the masters to enable us to derive the full benefit of their company. Simply abiding by commandments is the first step. One third you will have it. Two third you will have it only when you dwell receptivity. When you feel that you are, I know, you feel easier. So all masters say the same thing in various physiology. At another place, Hafiz says, I have been grafted to my friend, to my guru. Grafted. You know what is meant by grafted? If a branch of one tree is embedded into the another tree, the fruit will be of that very tree, mother tree. But the perfume and the taste will be of the mother tree. There are subtle points of children with that to understand why masters have given this devotion to the Guru as the foremost thing to have full benefit of God. So Abhay says, I have been grafted to my Guru. When you graft two branches, what happens? The fruit from that appears to be the same. But the color and fragrance is that of the mother tree. Don't you feel like that? Nowadays, you see all this grafting going on with one tree or the other. One is grafted to the Guru, then there is no fear of anything. From then on, there is no birth, no death, no more coming and going and creation. Because Guru doesn't die. He never reaches to the end of the world. He's not the body. We take him as body to start with. This is the first step. Unless you lose him, he loses you, manifesting you, and you are no more. You feel like that. It is I, not now I, but Christ lives in me. I give you other examples too, to follow what is what. These are subtle points to be understood and given up by all masters who came in the past. So you'll find no illusion, no negative power, for one is drawn into the very nectar of life. What is God meant? He is the nectar of life. He is the bread of life. He is the nectar, of Naam, of world. Once it so happened, Ramakrishna was sitting and there was one plate full of honey. He asked Vivekananda, look here, you are a bee from which you eat this honey. He said, I will eat from the side. Then why? Because my wings may not be, much so that I may die. Then it always looked as if the sea of immortality plunged headlong into it. So what is Guru do? Follow me, my point. Guru is not the body, the power manifested. Him is the Guru. And he manifests in, draws your all attention from outside and gives you contact with that. So plunge headlong into it. Anyone who has done this has no fear of death. So when you know a Guru, you become a Guru. Valira Vali Vishnathan. He still remains no more. So what is the criterion? If a man has become such, he grafted with the Guru, I'll give you a criterion. Put the same question to the Guru and the same question to the disciple. He is living 100 miles away. He will reply the same words, in the same words.
Good morning. Welcome to the satsang of Master Kripal Singh. The recording we just heard was the first 30 minutes of the talk titled Devotion to the Guru, given on 10th November 1972 in Vancouver, Canada. Our reader this morning is Rick Casey. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Parit. I will be reading this morning from God-Man, continuing on with Chapter 20. I'm reading from the Ruhani Satsang website version. Chapter 20. How to find a perfect master and know him. To find a perfect master is not so easy as it may seem. While living on the plane of the senses all the time, we have not the eyes with which to recognize the human pole from which the power of God works in the world. Yet, where there is a will, there is a way. All that is required of an aspirant is the sincerity of purpose, intense longing, and a burning passion for the Lord above everything else. Where there is fire, oxygen of itself comes to its aid. The principle of demand and supply works equally alike in all the spheres of life, from the physical to the spiritual. There is always food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. Ask and it shall be given unto you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Matthew 7:7. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. Matthew 6:24. For in the Bible we have, I, the Lord, thy God, am a jealous God. And in the same way, God-man, like God, demands from his lovers an exclusive and unstinted love unto himself, and unless one is prepared to sacrifice his all, body, mind, possessions, the way unto him is not opened, nor can we come near to the God-man who makes manifest the way. When the chela is ready, the guru appears, is the law of God. How can a blindfolded person reach the ringmaster's cell by himself? No man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him. John 6:44. Those whom God wills are of themselves drawn to the God-man, or the God-man himself finds them out, no matter where they may be. Similarly, to know the God-man in his fullness is not given to man. We can only have such glimpses of his greatness as he may choose to grant. He alone is the judge of the time and measure of each advance, and reveals to us gradually as much of his spiritual wealth as he wishes, and this he does by degrees, as he qualifies us to grasp and understand and to hold it safely in trust. As one proceeds along in his company on the inner spiritual path, one gets to know him more and more as he sees his power working in all the inner planes from end to end, until in the purely spiritual region, Mukam Ihak or Sach Khan, He appears in his primal manifestation, Ek Ankar. On the physical plane, he is Word made flesh and dwells among us, according to the laws of the earth plane. And like any other worldly teacher, he teaches us, not, of course, of this world, but of a world totally different from this, a world that is self-luminous and is studded with stars, moons, and suns in countless numbers, while apparently sharing with us our joys and sorrows of this world, of the world. He yet remains far above the pairs of opposites, endlessly imparts to us his spiritual instructions, both without and within, encouraging us at every step by his words of wisdom, and in countless diverse ways inspires in us the love of God and exhorts us to glorify him. Though ever kind the Master is, yet none can claim his grace. His grace flows alike to all, yet each gets his fill as he ordains. Sadguru is Sat personified and knows one and all, himself and all, yet he remains above the praise and malice of all. Chapter 21, His Life and Conduct. The life and conduct of a perfect master single him out as a unique personality apart from the rest of mankind. 1. He is always a bestower of gifts and never a recipient. He never wishes for the slightest service from his following. He earns his own living and is never a burden upon anyone. All his personal savings, if any, he spends on the relief of the needy. Touch ye not the feet of one who makes his living out of the offerings of the people. O Nanak, he who earns his own bread and helps the needy knows the path. 2. He does not charge any fees for imparting spiritual instructions. On the contrary, he bestows spirituality as a free gift, like any other gift of God, such as light, air, water, and so forth. 3. He is a living embodiment of humility. With all his powers and greatness co-equal with God, he never claims credit for anything, but attributes everything to God or to his own master. Like a fruit-laden branch of a tree, he bows to the lowest and moves about in simple dignity, peculiar to him alone. He who regards himself as the lowest is in fact the highest. 4. He is at peace with all and is angry with none. He smilingly forgives all who talk ill of him and does not pick flaws in others. His love embraces all humanity. Christ-like, he proclaims and practices the cardinal truth, love thine enemies. 5. Purity, godliness, and spirituality flow from him like shining springs of cool and refreshing waters, bringing life to the parched and hearts of the aspirants who joyfully move along the spiritual path under his able guidance. 6. He does not wear any conspicuous form of dress. He adopts just an easy middle path. His grand trunk road bypasses austerities on the one hand and forms and formalities on the other. His teaching consists of enunciating natural truths sink into the soul, and everyone, irrespective of sex and age, can practice the spiritual discipline enjoined by him. 7. He never believes in nor performs miracles for attracting people and gaining their credence as a juggler would do. He keeps his treasures well concealed in the deepest recesses within him. He may, if necessity, make use of his powers on some special occasion. The disciples, of course, every day feel the hidden hand of the Master working for their welfare and advancement. Chapter 22. The Physical Form of the Master. We read of peculiarities in the physical form of a perfect master. Physically, too, he suffers from no deformity and has no weaknesses in him. His gait is full of grace and dignity. His eyes shine like those of a lion. He has a broad forehead, the mark of a lotus on his feet, and generally a black mole on his brilliantly luminous face. Hafiz, a great Sufi poet of Shiraz, tells us, "If that beauty of Shiraz, the master, were to take charge of my wandering mind, I would throw away both the worlds, earth and heaven, at the altar of the wonderful mole on his face." Chapter 23. The Influence of the Master. In his presence, the mind grows docile and feels anchored. How can we get the company of such a one? By looking at whom the ever-restless mind gets lost and life impulses swarm upon the soul. The beloved master makes a true friend and bestows God intoxication. He sheds around him rays of purity, saturated with dignified humility, which exert a powerful influence upon the jivas. His words are charged with spirituality and drag the soul into the beyond and administer a kind of living intoxication, exhilaration. If he were to disclose his secrets, my very soul would swiftly soar Godward. Maulana Rumi. 2. A steady gaze at his forehead and eyes reveals a peculiar light which gives a pull to the soul and momentarily gathers up the all-pervading sensory currents, and one feels in his being in higher consciousness. 3. He is a prince of peace and is above the pairs of opposites. His association releases in us currents of bliss and benediction. He dispels all thoughts of antagonism and rivalry and gives instead equipoise to the soul, leading gradually to the Godhead. In whose company one feels blessed is the Master of Truth. He purifies the mind and grants salvation to the soul. 4. He is completely filled with the power of Ohas, the fruit of chastity, and his forehead shines with godly light. One is irresistibly drawn by the magnetism of his charged words. From his eyes, a peculiar light shines forth, which, like an osprey, paralyzes the mind. He works like a leaven and quickens life in the desert of the mind. 5. With his lynx eyes, his gaze can penetrate deep into the feelings and emotions of a person. He adjusts his instructions according to times and individual needs. The physical raiment of a jiva, or soul, is for him just like a transparent glass jar. Though he can easily detect what is therein, he never exposes it to public view and keeps his experience of each to himself. Whoever goes to him, whether a beetle or a wasp, gets sweet fragrance as from a flower. In the house of the master, everything is in abundance, and each gets what he wishes for. Every person who contacts a master soul receives spiritual impressions which, in the course of time, are bound to fructify. From the very moment an individual meets a master, better times are assured to him. 6. A Sant Satguru is verily the Son of God. He has genuine love alike for persons of all religions, nationalities, and countries. He sees the light of God in all. His appeal is therefore universal to all mankind. All are born of the same light, and as such, there is no difference between man and man. O Nanak, people of all denominations, flock into the fold of the Satguru. Satguru is all merciful and all knowing. He treats all alike and does the work of all who have faith in him. He neither destroys the old church nor sets up another church of his own. He is a master of truth and does not care to what sect or creed a person may belong. All that matters is spiritual aspiration, for that alone befits a jiva for the master's path. When one revels in shabd or word, he forgets all about himself. For the intelligent, there is but one path, no matter be he a pundit or a sheikh. Kabir. He fearlessly talks of the spiritual path that lies within each one of us, in spite of our religious differences. One who is able to establish contact with such a master is in fact a veritable pilgrim on the path, and gets the greatest benefit from him. Maulana Rumi therefore says, "Should ye be anxious for a pilgrimage, ye must take for a guide and companion any experienced pilgrim, no matter whether he be a Hindu, a Turk, or an Arab. Care not how he may look, but see only that he is competent and knows the path." We have, after all, not to establish any worldly relationship with the Master. All that we need from him is spiritual instruction and guidance, and if he can give us that, it should be considered enough. 7. Master saints are a manifestation of Godhead. If heavenly truths dawn on them silently and subtly, so do their instructions work quietly and sink into the very depths of the jivas without any word of mouth. A sheikh, master, like God, is embedded in the formless beyond, and he imparts his teachings without uttering a single syllable. The instructions of the master are in a language that is speechless, and can neither be imparted by word of mouth nor by word recorded. Why do ye not understand my speech? Even because ye cannot hear my word. John 8:43. Tongue of thought is his only instrument. It is a manner of inner experience for the spirit. Maulana Rumi says, soul is of the same essence as that of God. It is God epitomized and can express itself without any outer aid, like organs of speech. In the teachings of the Masters, physical senses are not of much avail. Everything is done automatically despite the senses. One sees without eyes, hears without ears, walks without feet, acts without hands, and talks without tongue. For this is just like death in life. O Nanak, it is then alone that one can know the cosmic will and meet the beloved. Maulana Rumi also says the same thing. I fly into those regions without wings, travel there without feet, enjoy mana and elixir without lips and palate, and see the glories thereof by closing my eyes. 8. The aspirants seldom have to question the master to resolve their doubts, so the latter of his own accord explains things that are uppermost in the minds of the audience. 9. Time and again, the teachings of the master center around one theme, Nam, or Surat Shabd Yoga. In clear terms, they tell us that one cannot find God nor reach Him by engaging in outer pursuits, for He is the Lord of our very soul and must therefore be sought within by the process of inversion. St. Matthew, in his Gospel, tells us, Verily, I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 18:3. Again, in the Gospel of St. Luke we have, Verily, I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child shall in no wise enter therein. Luke 18:17. Great indeed is man, for his body is verily the temple of God, and the crest jewel of knowledge shines forth within. Once again, St. Luke tells us, The kingdom of God cometh not by observation. The kingdom of God is within you. Luke 17:20-21. A Muslim divine speaks in similar strain. The human heart is masjid, mosque, and the body is the place of worship. Again, it does not befit a spirit, soul, the denizen of the God-made mosque, human body, to wander in search of the beloved in man-made temples. Tulsi Sahib. Maghribi Sahib also tells us, Thy beloved is within thee, and thou art ignorant of it. He is the very soul of thy soul, and thou art wandering without in quest of him. Maulana Rumi in this context says, Within the folds of thy brain there are wonderful gardens and beauty spots. Should you like to enjoy them, hie to a murshid, master, for instruction. Those who search without for the inestimable treasure are in stark ignorance. They wander in the bewildering mirage of the desert sands of the world, like a deer who runs about looking for musk in bushes. The pinned human body is the exact replica of Brahman, universe. The same spirit is working on both the microcosm and the macrocosm. We cannot see, feel, and be one with the cosmic spirit unless we establish harmony and come in touch with the spirit within us. Until the embodied spirit becomes disembodied and rarefied and rises above the sensual plane, it cannot harmonize itself with universal spirit. Nevertheless, our quest for God or universal spirit is all the time on the physical plane. We try to discover God under the bowels of the earth or the snow-capped mountains, in the waters of the sacred rivers, and on desert sands, in man-made temples and mosques and churches and synagogues. Hence, we fail to find Him. If we know the inner path in the body, we can hope to experience and feel the influence of the great power within. But this inversion or conversion is not possible without the aid of an adept in paravidya, science of the soul, for he alone holds the key to the kingdom of God, and his words act as an open sesame that fling open the secret door. Just peep within as instructed by the Master, and thou shalt find within thyself a veritable temple of God. 10. The teachings of master souls are perfect, and their findings are as verifiable as in any other exact science. Their experience and realization is, however, quite different from book learning and intellectualism, nor is it a figment of an obsessed brain, as some think. The saints always talk with conviction and authority, for their utterances come from the depths of their souls. Their knowledge is neither derived from books nor based on hearsay testimony. They directly give us first-hand experiences of their own in pure, unalloyed, and unadulterated form. Again, they never ask for blind faith and acceptance on authority. On the contrary, each aspirant is asked to personally verify the results for himself. Truth is that which must be experienced at once, and not after ages, no matter how slight that experience may be in the first instance. The masters see things through to their very roots and then talk. Nanak sees God right before him. Sri Ramakrishna, being questioned by Naren, later known as Swami Vivekananda, about seeing God, replied, "Yes, my child, I have seen God as I see you." In fact, all master souls have actual experience of the Godhead, and they revel in his light and life, and in a way become conscious co-workers with him. Shamas E. Tabriz says, "Better by far it is to see God with one's own eyes and to hear the voice of God with one's own ears. His glory is hidden behind the darkness at the back of the eyes, and his greatness may be apprehended within." In St. John we read, "When the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, they that hear shall live." John 5:25. I have come to the end of my time. I was reading from Godman, chapters 20 through 23. Thank you, Master, for everything.
Thank you, Rick, for the absorbing reading. There were 80 of us at today's satsang, and thank you, everyone, for your patience listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So thank you for your affording this opportunity of snatching away your time from your busy hours to just have a patient hearing what I have come to know. So I thank you all for all that.